The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
Welcome to Cascadia News Now. I am among your hosts, Dave Willingham, and I'm joined by also host Tim Johnson. Hey, Tim.
Hey.
So we've got a very special show tonight. We've got a couple of interviews with candidates running in Whatcom County's 2nd District, one of our brand new districts. We've got Todd Donovan and Amy
Glasser.
There we go, Amy Glasser. That's more than a little embarrassing. Just a couple notes up at the top. Billingham Pride is this Sunday at noon. The parade will be this Sunday at noon, ending at a festival. If you're marching, remember that last hill is kind of steep after that nice, long, leisurely trip down Cornwall, so pace yourself. We got Downtown Sounds coming up tonight at 6 out just outside the Spark Museum here, and so you might hear some of that bleeding in when we're talking. But first, I wanted to take a quick minute to talk about what just happened last week. We finally got a state budget very late in the evening. I think the governor signed it at about 11 p.m. Was great that we didn't have a shutdown. Very bad for all of us that our state processes work this way. Tim, you've taken a look at it. What did you think?
Well, I think you're correct. I think actually he signed it at 11:15, which is about 45 minutes before, you know, the apocalypse. And I just think that best decisions are not made under that kind of stress. That's hostage-taking mode. People get to make very severe demands, particularly if they don't care if the government shuts down or not. They get to make very severe demands. And it was pretty obvious from the commentary from the legislature that they all did not know exactly what was in a budget when they approved it because they were under time constraints. And some of those details have leaked out since they approved the budget. They're not all great things.
Yeah, it's really disappointing that once again we come down to this, down to the wire, and we get something where much of the legislature didn't have a chance to read it ahead of time. We're still finding out details because there's a lot in there. But, you know, headline items, 7-point-something billion for education, which was, you know, their big thing. No big change on McCleary. Changes in the tax structure, property tax hike for us here in Bellingham, and I believe about half of the state gets a cut.
Yeah. There's some celebratory things. I mean, I think that the legislature stepped up to the challenge of McCleary and put forward a plan that moves us forward on that particular issue. One of the things that they did, Washington State, I think, is now the fifth state to actually have a family leave bill in place that gives families who are about to have a baby, gives them a little chance to plan which of the spouses and in which fashion get time off. And those are very progressive things. And so it's not a completely bad budget. But again, it's not what adults do, I don't think.
No, and you know, the thing that stuck out at me the most was I've been complaining for years about the crazy sweetheart deal that Boeing got years ago, and no one in the legislature, well, not no one. Sometimes there's bills put forward to adjust that or make it dependent on how many jobs they're actually providing. And anyone who has known me for any length of time knows that at some point I will go on about this for some time. And I don't think the answer was to just give every other business the same tax break. I think that was a move in the wrong direction.
Yeah, correct. And I understand exactly what you're talking about there. The one thing I would say about it is that this is an endangered species in Washington, manufacturing jobs. I don't condemn it just, you know, offhandedly. I believe that there was a sense that these are jobs that pay a little higher wage, that, you know, are sort of the foundation of sort of the blue collar ethic that we have in this country, and that may, and these are, it particularly affects people in rural areas, which have not benefited, I guess, from some of the economic advances that have happened in places like Seattle and Tacoma and Spokane. So I'm not going to condemn it from that standpoint, but I do think that it sends a terrible, horrible message to, you know, the general public that everybody's property taxes are going to go up, but some people get this gigantic tax break.
Yeah, and it's disappointing that once again, here's just a big push of, you know, state money to businesses. And I agree, we need to be supporting and helping these jobs, especially like you mentioned in rural areas. But we should be tying them to something. There should be some performance metrics.
Correct.
We don't just give everybody a high school diploma. You have to meet some standards. If you're going to get a tax break for hiring people, you must hire people.
Correct.
You must show that you're worthwhile.
Exactly. And, you know, the analogy there, the corollary is that this tax break was given to Boeing. The first thing they did with their tax break is move all their jobs to North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah. So lots to unpack. We will be talking about that probably as long as I am on this show. And for now, we're going to switch over to our candidate interviews. Our first up is Amy Glasser, and that starts right now.
Whatcom County Council, you are the answer. What's the question?
What does the council need? The council needs a social worker. The council needs a progressive woman. The council needs a voice for the homeless and the people who are marginalized in the community.
What does a social worker bring that other candidates or other people on the council are not bringing?
I've spent my life working in the trenches, working with people in the community, in the county, in their homes. So I see what they have, I see what they need, and I see what would make their lives just a little bit easier if the county could help just a little bit more.
So let's look at some specific actions that you think the council could take. First of all, let's start with protecting Lake Whatcom.
I think I'm from the East Coast. And there are no motorboats in reservoirs that people drink water. So I understand that the issue's got to be how do we balance out people's recreation and their property rights with the lake. But I think we should be grandfathering in a clause that there be no more motorized vehicles on the lake from now on. I also think we can do a much better job in terms of how we deal with weeds and stuff around the lake. We're using Roundup and some pretty dangerous stuff in the water. And I think just some simple things like that could put us in a better direction.
What about other watersheds in the county?
The other watersheds, several are full, and therefore we need to respect the fact that they are not to be touched. And the ones that do have some room for people to take water out of, we've got to start measuring and figuring out where the watersheds are leading, what's not getting into the streams, and what are we doing that's not helping the salmon.
You're running in a newly progressive district. How will you work with pro-development interests?
I'm a social worker. That's what I do. I've spent my life working with people on different areas of life, different occupations, different values and perspectives. And what I pride myself in doing is bringing people together and having people look at best interest of children. Because if we can live our lives in what's best for our kids, we'll all be coming probably to very similar answers.
If I was a person who was scared of not having jobs in the county, I might hear the question that you just answered and think, she's talking about children, that's code for environment. Does that mean she's anti-development?
I'm anti the development that's going to take the water from people whose water it is. I'm anti-development if it's going to ruin the environment. I'm pro-development to build things that are going to work with our ecosystem, not against it.
What about dairy farms? And there's been some issues with dairy farms and pollution. How are you going to balance that out?
That's a tough one. That's a huge part of our economy. And I think what we've got to do is we've got to first figure out, again, what water's going where. I don't think we know that about our farms yet. And I think there's probably places that water is being taken that's not useful to the streams, and other places that we could probably manage better watering systems and retaining water for drier months, and also, again, doing a lot better on buffering our streams and our creeks.
So you declared, I think around 5 months ago, you said.
December 6th.
And you are now running against a sitting councilman, which you weren't when you declared. Has your messaging changed?
Not really. I'm running for the county. I'm running as a social worker with a different perspective. My opponent has excellent views. He's got a great history on environment and on taking care of our county. I just want to add, not take away.
And Whatcom also coexists with the Lummi and Nooksack Nations. What's your experience and connections with them?
Well, I started as a social worker working with people on the reservation when it came to child issues and family issues.
In Whatcom County?
In Whatcom County, yes. For the past 14 years, I've had a contract with the state and with the county, and often my work can include working with people from Lummi Reservation. I've also been an activist and was working as much as I could to try and help them to stop the Gateway Pacific coal terminal, and they were able to do it.
And what other issues do you think face the two governments, or should I say three governments, working together?
Well, I think one thing that we can do that would, I don't know why it hasn't been done. Maybe it's really difficult to do. I think we should have a contract with the Lummi Nation that anything that happens over at that pier and on their territory that the Army Corps of Engineers has identified as their territory is up to them to decide what happens. We pass on any industry that comes to us and wants to develop and say it's up to the Lummi Reservation. If they give it a go, then we'll entertain the thought, but not until they're okay with it. It's their space.
And you mentioned Cherry Point just a moment ago. Has our Whatcom County government, the current government, taken the right steps regarding Cherry Point?
Absolutely. That land is Lummi Nation territory. That is incredibly important to the ecosystem, to salmon survival, which is our survival. And the Lummi Nation is doing a good job of trying to keep it protected. And I think the more we don't do more increased fossil fuel development there, the better we are, and we certainly shouldn't be sending out unrefined fossil fuels.
Should there be additional steps taken?
If we went for that program, that contract between us and Lummi Reservation, I think that'll probably take care of it, because they're going to take care of their land and it won't be up to us.
Let's switch gears and talk about tiny houses. You've been a proponent of tiny houses since the get-go.
Yes.
Where do you see those houses going?
Everywhere. One of the things is we have people living homeless behind our homes, 8-10 people at once. If we build tiny developments of tiny homes with a service building attached all through the county, not just Bellingham. Bellingham does not just have the problem. It just seems like it because everybody comes to Bellingham. If we have outreach services that go into small little tiny home developments of 6 to 8 homes, no one can say not in my backyard, because they're already in your backyard, and now they'll be next to you in a home where they won't be polluting the environment and they won't be doing drugs out in the open. They'll be in their own little tiny home to do whatever they want to themselves without hurting anybody else. And I think that'll save the county a lot of money, both in our environmental needs as well as our jail, as well as the police.
So you see the county paying for these homes?
Absolutely. We take it out of our law and order budget, which is 55% plus of our county budget. That's way too much money going to law and order. It needs to go to safety, and safety is homes.
Well, and we're going to get into law and order in a moment, but let's stick with the tiny homes. Does this mean you're advocating for the tiny homes? Does this mean that you were opposed to the Rotor Site shelter?
Yes, I was, actually. I think putting 200 people in a low-barrier shelter out at the water was a recipe for every problem that happened on that waterfront to be the problem, to be the fault of that shelter. It was appointing, they're the problem, that's why business isn't happening. It was a terrible idea, too many people in one place. We need to spread shelters out among the county the same way people are spread out among the county. Small shelters, some for men and children, some for women and children, some for families. So we actually create environments within their own communities to get healthy.
So in the meantime, there shouldn't be any transitional stopgap while these tiny houses are being built a few at a time, because that's leaving a lot of people on the streets.
Absolutely. I do think that we need a stopgap, and we're always going to need temporary and transitional shelters, but I think they should be a lot smaller, at the most for 40 or 50 people in places all through the county, not just in Bellingham.
And doesn't that make it difficult for transportation for people who are homeless and need to get at services which are largely in Bellingham?
That's the issue. Those services need to be in the community. And I know, as somebody who works for the Behavioral Health Access Program, that we are outreach workers and case managers can go out into the county. And if we start actually asking providers to open up outreach centers where maybe the county does the housing of them, then we will have the social services in the county so everybody can get to services and not have to come to Bellingham.
Is that also something that the county government can incentivize, or how do you make services just magically appear in the county?
As a social worker, I know I would be delighted to go out into the county, but often the problem is I don't have a place to meet people. So if the county had a little service office, whether it be within those tiny home developments or within the Department of Health or at some social service agency in the county, any government agency that has an office that could lend it out to a provider would be a perfect opportunity for somebody to get out there and do work in the community and not have to have people come to Bellingham.
A new jail, perhaps? An office in a new jail? Is that what?
I think my new jail needs to be right next to or in the same place as the old jail. That boondoggle out there in Ferndale is a mess and it needs to be sold. That's a really bad place for it. It's a bad idea, and I'm 100,000% against it.
And we do want to talk about that too. But again, with the tiny houses, it sounds like a nice idea, but I worry that it is just kind of chipping away at a mountain of a problem. And there's so many people that I just don't see how this is a complete rational solution in and of itself.
It isn't the only solution. You're absolutely right. There are people that are not going to be able to manage themselves in a tiny home on their own, regardless of what services are there. There are people that don't require those social services, but what they do require is a home to live in that's affordable. And there are other ways of building tiny homes and developments that aren't necessarily for the homeless, but are for low-income people on a fixed income. We also do have group home opportunities for people who do need that social support network on a constant basis. And we need to also have a jail for people who are dangerous in the community. I'm not the idealistic person I was 40-something years ago when I thought everybody could be okay in the community. There are some people that are a danger to themselves and others, and they need containment. It doesn't need to be a jail, but it does need to be in a facility that is contained.
And talking about people are dangerous, I'm sure you heard about the city council letter that was just sent to the current county council. So let's pretend that you are a county councilwoman and you just received this letter. Let's look at the points that the Bellingham City Council made. First one was the location of the new jail away from the county courthouse. You've already kind of taken a stand on that. How do you see that working out?
They have to sell that property.
Current jail?
The jail property they bought in Ferndale. That property has about $10 million worth of mitigation that it has to have. I don't know why they bought it in the first place. It was, to me, it was done behind closed doors with no open hearings, no discussion of why we're spending millions of dollars on property that could have been bought for a quarter of the price somewhere else and closer. In Ferndale, it's a terrible idea. City government is in Bellingham, and you can't bring all the services to Ferndale unless you're going to remove city government and actually move it out in the county, and I believe that's not in our charter. Our charter says that the county facility has to be in Bellingham.
At one point, you were saying that you want county services all over for the homeless, and now you're saying that you want the county services to stay in Bellingham?
I don't want county services all over. I want human services all over, and that it's social services, and it could be part county services. When I'm saying I don't want the jail services in Ferndale, the bail bonds, the lawyers, the people who visit, that's an incredibly difficult place to get to. It's when you get out of jail, they let you out first thing in the morning. I don't know exactly what you're going to do with that at Ferndale.
So let's look at the second question, which was the proposed size and the financial commitments to alternatives to incarceration.
It's backwards. We have to first look at the Vera Institute's assessment of what we can do to keep people out of jail. We need to look at the Incarceration and Reduction Task Force that's been working for a couple of years on the proposals they have. Once we enact those and we take people out of jail who are in there because of mental health reasons or financial reasons, and we take people out of there who are in there for pretrial and are not a danger, I think we'll be pleasantly surprised at how little amount of space we need for containing dangerous people. We also still have our facility on Division Street, which could be just perfect for people who do not require the intense containment that you would need for a hardline security.
A lot of people keep coming back to this point about who is housed in our jail now and why. And I think that there is some agreement. But a lot of times when people talk about the solution of getting those people out of the jail, is it really that easy? Are there legalities involved? Like, can you just walk in and say, okay, this person has mental health issues but is not dangerous, boom, and then you just unlock the door and let them out?
Well, people can be let out with certain types of supervision, with electronic home monitoring. They can be let out in the custody of others. They can be on probation. There's lots of ways of monitoring people. And if we don't put people in jail in the first place who have mental health problems and actually transition them or bring them to a triage facility where they can either get inpatient or outpatient health, we're going to be doing a lot better service to our community.
So looking at alternatives, then the location of a booking and holding facility, should there just be one?
Yeah, I think so.
And it should be in Bellingham?
Absolutely.
Okay. And the local housing of pretrial inmates?
We have a district attorney, a prosecuting attorney, who does not like to let people out. He's afraid of what will happen if somebody does something. I think that's a really, again, a backwards way to think of our people who are our neighbors and our society. People are not convicted. They're just accused of a crime, and they should be allowed to be out unless they're a danger to others or themselves. And there are way too many people sitting in jail because of prosecutorial discretion that is not letting them out.
So here we are on the verge of the primary. And as I said earlier, your race has changed quite a bit. How are you situated going forward? When you started running, you were the only candidate.
Right. For the first 5 months, I was the only candidate. Everything was in place. Satpal Sidhu was running for the 3rd district. Barry was running at-large. Rudd was running in 1. That left Todd, who was going to run for the at-large in 2 years, and everybody was going to be happy. Now what we've got is Todd running 2 years early so that he could run in the 2nd, and that puts us head-to-head against each other. I just go by what I'm running on. If people decide they'd like to keep Todd and let the council decide who's going to fill his spot for the 1 year before the next election, it won't be in the voters' hands. Or I, of course, would hope that they would vote for me, and then they get Todd for his last 2 years, because his term is 4. He's only been there 2. And then he can make whatever decision he wants at the end of his 4-year term.
Well, they could appoint you, though.
There isn't a chance that they would ever appoint me.
You think so?
Never.
How come?
I'm pretty direct. I'm pretty assertive. And I think my style worries people, of which it really shouldn't. I have different sides of me. When I'm an advocate and an activist, I'm an advocate and an activist, and I'm incredibly passionate. When I'm sitting on a council, I'm a systems person, and I work with everybody to come together to make good solutions. And I hope the council will see that it's different roles, different jobs, and once I'm there, I'll be great, but they've only seen me in this role of activist and an advocate. And that might make them a little anxious about my style, because I am who I am, and this doesn't change very much.
And you are perceived as an activist, of course. That's how people have gotten to know you in Bellingham. As you yourself say, being a councilperson is a very different role. What is your experience for that kind of role?
I worked with the U.S. Army for 5 years in Europe. So working with an organization that I often disagreed with basically just everything, I had to come up with common grounds. And as I said, best interest of children is always a common ground I think you can get everybody on the same page for. Doing unto others the way we want to be treated ourselves is my other common phrase I have. If I take those two, I think we can come up with some great solutions to the problems that we have in the county, regardless who's on the council. But I'm kind of hoping it'll be Todd and Barry and Rudd and me and Rebecca Boonstra in the 3rd. And Barbara, and we carry on.
But some people may see you as being an activist councilwoman.
I'm never going to stop fighting for people who are marginalized. That won't change. What will change is how I get things done. I've spent my life on the outside trying to help systems and ask systems to change. If I'm allowed the opportunity to work on the inside, I can help with people to maybe mold some changes that are best for everybody. And I can do that while still being an activist and advocate. That will never change in me.
And you alluded to your style a minute ago. Neither you nor I are raised in Bellingham. We're not exactly the Bellingham types. Do you think that helps you, or maybe is a challenge for you on the campaign trail?
It's a bit of a challenge at times. I have found that around here, honestly, Stephanie, there's not enough of us to annoy them too much. So this New York style that I have is actually pretty novel in a lot of ways, and it has been incredibly useful and appreciated in my job, because beating around the bush doesn't get things done. Being direct and saying what you mean and going for it does get things done. So I think although the style might make some people uncomfortable, they'll be wonderfully surprised to see how much I can get done, because I'm relentless when I know something is good for kids and for people.
And I don't think anybody doubts your relentlessness.
Probably never.
I don't think that this interview was here to clarify that. But I know you've said over and over again, you're a social worker. You like to talk about that a lot. I'm also a social worker. I get that. But you talk about hearing people from all different perspectives, and that's part of your selling point. But I don't hear you using the word compromise. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be a fear that a lot of people have, that you're talking about being an activist. You're like, I'm never going to give up my passions. And I resonate with that. But I think the question is, can you actually compromise? Can you sit down and maybe go against your values?
It depends what it is. I guess if you gave me examples, I might be able to let you know how I would do it. But let's face it, compromise is the only way anything seems to get done. So I can have my value and it be way up here. You can't see me because we're radio, but really, really high up, knowing that that's where I'd like to reach. but also knowing realistically that when you work with different people from different walks of life, you're not going to get everything you want. But I'll also always strive for the things that I think are best for people and understand that I'm not always going to be able to get what I think is best for people. And I might not, shudder to say, might not always be right.
Well, here's an example. Here's an example from one of my co-hosts, and that is there's been some concern about legalities from the council in the past and legal implications. If you were in a situation where the council had made a decision to meet in executive session in private, but you felt like it was an issue where the public needed to know, how would you resolve that?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I think it would depend on what the issue is. If it was something that the county and the people need to know about, then I would advocate for and I would let people know that that would be my plan. I don't do things behind people's backs. However, I know there are ways to negotiate, and sometimes you have to negotiate quietly in order to get everybody's needs met and everybody heard in an honest forum. But if it's something that I think is not in the best interest of the county and is being shoved through behind a closed door, it's going to be really hard for me not to say something, because my job is to represent the people who elect me. It isn't to go along with a group that makes decisions behind closed doors.
Let's end with a feel-good question.
Oh, good.
What have you learned on the campaign trail that you did not know going in?
I learned that there are about 20, 30 more homeless projects going on in this community that I didn't even know about. I'm learning about different programs for the homeless, needle exchange programs that I honestly didn't even know existed, that I'm so proud of this city and this county for doing such amazing, amazing things that 14 years didn't even know all about them. So whatever happens, I have learned so much, which will make my job as a therapist and as a social worker and a systems worker that much better, regardless of what happens.
Amy Glosser, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie.
Welcome back to Cascadia News Now. That was Amy Glosser and our own Stephanie Contreras. Tim, you had to listen to that. What do you think?
Well, first, I think Stephanie did an outstanding job of interviewing a candidate and really focusing down on the essential issues that are going to play out through the fall. So I want to give her a compliment on that. The other thing that I think came clear in the discussion is, you know, Amy is a very exciting candidate, and she's running on a couple of things that are completely unique and not represented currently on county council. One is that she's a woman, and there are not very many of those. There's only one currently on county council. She's a liberal woman, and there's none of those on the county council. She is bringing into focus on the issue of affordable housing and homelessness that's completely not represented in any way currently on county council. They've never, to my knowledge, ever had a conversation about homelessness, and it's a countywide issue because there are homeless people all over the county. So she's doing that. And then the other thing that I think she's doing that's very powerful is she is marrying that to the issues of social justice. And she has taken this issue of the jail and she has subordinated it within this larger of criminal justice and subordinated within this larger idea of creating social justice in Whatcom County. So I think she's I think her message is very exciting.
Yeah. And I have to say, you know, I feel totally justified last week when I was talking about more candidates is better for all of us. And, you know, I think that she's raised some issues that. And it's thinking about them in ways that I hadn't thought of, like the idea of bringing services out to the county by leasing or sharing existing provider space. And I think that that's an interesting idea. I don't know quite how it would work, but you know, it's interesting to have someone out there saying, you know, these are some new ways that we can go about this.
Correct, and I think that you know we're going to hear from Todd later in the show. And I think that people are going to hear that there's a very strong overlap in a lot of issues. But these are things unique to her and things that she brings and strengths that she has. And I think it's exciting to have that dimension and that breadth. And like you said, having a new candidate come in, somebody raising these issues, Bellingham is a safe district to raise these kinds of issues in. And I think that's an interesting dimension to her candidacy. And I think she presented herself very well.
And you are listening to Spark Radio on KMRELP 102.3 FM in Bellingham. Your community, your voice, your station. I am Dave Willingham, joined by Tim Johnson. And we're going to cut over now to Stephanie's interview with Todd. And Todd is the incumbent. He's still in the middle of his first term, I
Correct.
Believe. And this is what he had to say.
What did you set out to do on the Whatcom County Council, and what did you fulfill? What you have yet to fulfill?
Oh, it was a lot yet to fulfill. When I first got started, we were doing our comprehensive plan update. And that's one of the main reasons I ran the first time, because I knew that was going to be going on. So getting it in line with state law, that's been a problem. Kind of holding the line on urban growth areas, which I think we did pretty well. Taking a hard look at the future of Cherry Point and the public health, safety, environmental factors associated with the possibility that some of the operations out there might become involved in more crude export and coal export at the time, that was on the table. So we passed a moratorium dealing with that. We kind of strengthened the comp plan on some of those issues. We're still working on it. The stuff hasn't gone away. Since then, we did a budget, and one of my priorities on that budget was try to find some additional revenues. There is this culture of Whatcom County politics of never taking the 1%, even less than cost of living adjustment for additional property tax revenues. That hasn't been done in 20 years. We almost got it. We had 4 votes to do that, and the executive vetoed it. But I think we still got a lot of work to do on that budget, and now the jail.
When you ran in 2015, you ran on strengthening economy. It was like your number one issue. And is the county economy stronger?
Yeah, I think it is. And I don't think we can take any credit for that, as most politicians probably would, or elected officials. I think what we can say the county council is trying to do is to beef up what we're doing as far as economic development as a government. And we have tax revenues through something called the rural sales tax that creates a pool of money for economic development initiatives. And past executives have maybe wanted to spend that money on jail updates or, you know, retrofitting buildings. Even the current executive. The state law has actually changed. We can't spend that money on jail, but we can still spend on stuff that's not economic development. And using that money for actual economic development, trying to repurpose the role of the way the Port of Bellingham's been working with the county as far as not just building sidewalks and patching up windows with this EDI money, maybe
EDI.
Actually economic development initiative money, this rural sales tax stuff that's dedicated for economic development, but actually using it for business retention, business recruitment. And you know, some of that's going on, but that's a thing. I don't take credit for that, but Sat Paul Sidhu and Red Brown have been working on that. And you know, that's one way as a local government we can start building economic development.
So a few years from now, when you're running again or at the end of your term, what would you like to say was due to you in terms of the economy?
Well, I think this trying to repurpose what we're doing with the economic development money and trying to, you know, we put out essentially to bid to have competition for the agency that's actually going to be doing economic development, whether it's going to be the port or whether it's going to be something else or whether it's going to be in-house in the county. And 2 years from now or 4 years from now, it'd be great to be able to say, we're spending this money with people that are doing stuff we weren't doing before. It's doing business recruitment. It's doing business retention stuff. It's spending money on stuff like the All-American Marine thing down at, you know, that's
what's economic. The All-American Marine thing?
The port spent some money, public money, including some of this EDI money, to help them build a new facility so they can expand, so they can hire people. We want to be doing more of that and less of using the money to fix the windows on the courthouse.
Right, which is inevitable, I think. Do you have a courthouse plan?
I don't have a courthouse plan. I'd almost rather just see the thing rot than...
Is that part of your campaign?
No. You know, our capital facilities plan right now includes using economic development initiative money to repair the work that was not done properly and was not maintained. There are other revenue sources that could have been tapped before, that maybe should have been tapped before, but people didn't want to say they were raising taxes, so it wasn't. I don't want to see economic development money going for that kind of stuff.
So speaking of money that could have been raised and wasn't. We are on the brink of a legislative hopeful budget save. It sounds like Hearst is not going to be part of that. Where does the county go from here, and what do you want to see happen?
Well, I haven't even seen the budget yet, right? They're going to, as
when this airs, we have seen it.
Yeah.
But at this moment, we have not.
At this moment, we haven't seen it. What we've been, I've been worried about is that the Hearst thing was going to be used as sort of an incentive to get Republicans to sign on to something the Democrats got in the budget. I didn't like the 5239 Senate bill. That bill was essentially to go back to where we were, where people could steal water. And that's a hard way to put it, but, you know, be able to get a development permit with water that they didn't have a legal right to. There's ways we can deal with this, hopefully, without just going back to how things were.
Name two.
Letting people get a permit and they're using conservation measures for water, metering how much water people are using. You know, there's ways we can deal with the seasonal issues of in-stream flow that would allow people to develop, allow them to build conservation measures. You know, those are things we should be exploring regardless of Hearst. And my worry about what the legislature might do is just punt us back to where we were, and we're not recognizing the problem.
What else about the state budget are you concerned about?
I'm actually, as a Whatcom County official, interested in seeing what they'll do with the capital budget, because we have some major road projects that we'd like to see funded in there. We have a huge issue with Swift Creek and the asbestos flow continuing coming out of there that we're hoping to get some state money for. And again, that's a capital budget thing. Which I haven't heard anything about the capital budget, excuse me. But as far as a citizen, you know, the operating budget, I'm really curious to see what they do about McCleary and how much they fund it and what the court will say is or isn't adequate in terms of dealing with the McCleary thing.
Okay, switching gears. So your campaign and your race is one of a couple that are sort of heating up a bit in the primary, which is unusual. One of the questions is, some people are saying, well, Todd, you already had a job. So talk about your decision to run in the new district.
The district, it's just so hard to explain. Ironically, at some point when they were creating these maps.
And you were part of, Brent Bonner, to be fair, you were part of that plan.
Yeah, the whole thing was a compromise that I think left us worse off, but not as bad off as we could have been under the Republican proposal. But one of the people, Brett Bonner on the Redistricting Commission, referred to it as the Donovan map, which is ironic given that the map ended up putting myself, Barry Buchanan, and Ken Mann in the same district, with my seat transitioning it to running against Satpal Sidhu. Barry could run against Ken. Ken could retire. Barry could run at large. I could wait till 19 to run against Satpal. We could all retire. So, you know, it's a bit of a long story, but I don't want to run against Satpal. I worked hard to get him elected. I like having him on council. He adds great perspective and diversity. And I'd like to serve a second term. So the only way I can do that without running against Satpal is to run now.
So you are running against a Republican and a Democrat, except that you have implied that Amy Lesser is not a Democrat. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, that's not, yeah, I put air quotes over Democrat at one point. Which is maybe not fair, but no, she's definitely a Democrat. I think she calls herself a Bernie-crat maybe more than a Democrat. But that was in reference to a lot of her comments to the effect of, you know, wanting Rick Larson out of office, wanting Suzanne Dalbeny to go, raising protests against Governor Inslee, encouraging people to vote against Patty Murray. That wing of the Democratic Party, I guess, is they're still Democrats.
Well, and I think this comes down to the core of issues with the Democratic Party, as we saw in the national election. And there is still a more centrist fashion, and there's a more progressive fashion, and I think that's coming to play in your race.
Yeah, well, that's odd because, I mean, if you look at the three people that she filed to run against, myself, Ken Mann, and Barry Buchanan, would normally be considered the most progressive on the council. The person leading the charge against the oversized jail has been Ken. That was a fundamental part of my campaign in 2015 as well. The person like asking people actually look at new revenues has been myself. So to say we're the centrist part of the party, I don't know. I'm not sure I'd accept that.
I guess I'm coming back to, if somebody criticizes established Democrats, does that really mean that they're not a Democrat, or are they just
Yeah, no, fair. Yeah. No, we're all Democrats, yeah. And we're all fighting like a family.
So you said she chose to run in this district, which is her district as well. But at the time that she declared was December, I didn't know that you were going to run until you filed. So I don't know if there were any conversations, but do you think it was unfair that she ran?
No. I think it's unfair that she creates a narrative that it was an open seat when there were three incumbents in it. And she didn't contact any of them to ask, you know, what their intentions were. And that she was running unopposed in an open seat because she filed 5 months before filing week. That's a bit of a frustrating narrative. But yeah, to be fair, you know, I didn't know I was going to be running till fairly late because Sat Paul filed to run in his new district. But he changed his mind fairly late, which left me then facing the prospect of running against him in 2019. So, yeah, I mean, that I did decide late because Sat Paul changed his mind.
Right. Well, and hopefully it will become increasingly a competition on issues. And going back to what you said, that it's interesting that some people might tag you as a centrist. So you do identify as a progressive?
Yes.
So speak to that for a minute.
I'll just cover some of the things we just did. That, you know, as far as the people on the council that are trying to push for incarceration reduction and prevention, that are trying to find revenue for new social programs, that are taking on big coal and big oil. I caucus for Bernie. I have my issues with the centrist establishment wing of the Democratic Party. So, you know, if we're splitting hairs about that, and I ask people to ask my opponent, my Democratic opponent, now, why does she want me off the council? What are these issues that we're not really talking about issues? It's more like, well, it was an open seat and it, you know, it was just sitting there. Or she can, and I appreciate this, or she can bring a perspective that we don't have. But then she starts talking about gender, not really about issues. So I do really appreciate the fact that she's bringing a lot of attention to homelessness. And I appreciate the fact that she's discovered the jail issue and she's working on that. I've been working on that for longer.
Is there a difference in your positions on the jail?
I think we need a new jail. I could see spending money retrofitting the old jail. Some of the ideas I've heard her in terms of constructing stuff onto the new jail where the parking lot is there, I think would be prohibitively expensive. I think we both oppose the idea of a big jail being built in Ferndale. And actually, my main issue with this is also just the cost. Skagit County just built a 400-bed jail, which I think is probably too big for them as well. For $40 million, we're looking at a 470-bed jail for $110 million.
Yeah, why is that? How were they able to do that in Skagit?
And that was with union labor. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question for our executive. And until I get answers to that, I'm not supporting putting this on the ballot.
One more question about the makeup of the county council. So you're talking about having a great relationship with Sat Paul Sidhu, Barry Buchanan, Ken Mann's not going to be on there. Red Brown will still be on there probably. But it's the nature of it is changing because of the districts. Is there a perspective that you think is missing?
Oh, yeah. The conservative, rural, outside of Bellingham perspective is missing. And I think it's fair when you see people come up there, particularly Republicans, who say Whatcom County Council doesn't represent me. We don't. This is a fairly blue county. Obama gets 58%. Clinton gets 58%.
But also Trump came here and he didn't come to a lot of places like Washington State.
Trump got less support in Whatcom County than Mitt Romney did. He barely got 36%, I think. But even if Whatcom County is 37% or 42% Republican, there's no one they can see on council that represents them. Maybe Barbara. For better or for worse, the districts are going to change that. You know, we'll have a district around Linden. The Foothills district is going to be, you know, a toss-up, potentially conservative. We'll see how that goes.
Let's just say that happens. Are we going to see our council get anything done?
I think so. And I guess that, you know, one reason why I decided to run for council was my experience on the Charter Commission. I was in the minority there. There were 9 Republicans and 6 Democrats, and I got on fine with the Republicans. And there were some things we could find space on, not too many. But be civil and try to work together. And if, you know, the balance on this council changes, I think I could continue to do that.
Let's take a look at our growing population. And currently, there are over 5,000 people who are underemployed or unemployed seeking work in the county.
I'd think the number would be higher.
So what can we do about that?
Yeah, and that's not just a Whatcom County issue. I mean, that's the new economy of the United States and a lot of the advanced industrial democracies.
But we're the ones who have to deal with it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so what, you know, how do we get, we're talking about service sector jobs, you know, how do we get those paying better? We can talk about minimum wages. There's an interesting study that just came out with Seattle's minimum wage. People are getting more money, but they're getting fewer hours. So, you know, maybe there's a sweet spot between what we have where our minimum wage is right now and where we can get it, where people are making more money and not losing hours. We have to work harder with nonprofits and with the government and with developers to have housing that's coming in at a, not just a below market rate, but at a reasonable market rate. And, you know, it's interesting when we have developers come talk to council about how they're going to build new housing. They talk about how it's going to be gorgeous, $500,000, $700,000 homes. You know, how do we get a market where we're building stuff different than that, so people who are making, you know, service sector wages can find decent apartments and decent houses? I like the idea of opening up, and this is a heresy to some people, detached ADUs in the city, and I'm working with my neighborhood on that. Because it's, you know, that's a social justice issue. That's affordable housing that people are, you know, making $15 an hour might be able to afford that housing in a good neighborhood.
So Whatcom coexists with Lummi and Nooksack Nation. Talk about your experience and connections with them.
More with the Lummi than the Nooksack. And both tribes supported me in my last run. I think it's really important for elected officials to, you know, when invited, and it's always an honor to be invited to their events, to go out there, to treat, and I think this is important to the tribes, they're governments. And, you know, we have to look at these as government-to-government relations. Not just another interest group or actor in the
county. And what are the issues that are going to come up in those government-to-government overlaps?
Oh, I was just mentioning our capital budget. You know, the improvements for Slater Road, or just improvements for roads in general that, you know, the tribe, and I'm more familiar with the Lummi side of this, but, you know, the tribes are a government with a stake in that sort of capital development. Whatcom County's traffic flow plans are related to that. We have to work together on those sorts of issues. But I mean, almost anything you think about that the government does, you know, the cities and counties coordinate things, and the county and the tribes have to coordinate things. And I think we can do a better job on that. But we're on much better terms than previous councils have been back in the Marlene Dawson era. And that's a pretty low bar to say we're doing better than, but we're doing better.
You brought up Cherry Point earlier. Has the council done enough on Cherry Point to preserve it? And if not, what other steps do you want to see the council take to preserve that area?
Preserve is an interesting way to phrase that. Because, you know, we have to preserve the industry that's there, and we have to preserve the environment. We have to protect public health. No, I don't think we've done enough. And we have done far less than what the Whatcom Business Alliance is accusing us of doing. Those industries are doing fairly well, and we're being accused of killing jobs and cutting education funding because we are trying to study. We've put aside $150,000 to study what exactly a local government can do in the face of, you know, new pipelines being pointed here, in the face of, you know, increased crude by rail coming here. What can we do with railroads and pipelines as a local government? So, you know, as far as our critical area plan and our comprehensive plan, and the state shoreline management plan and the Army Corps of Engineers saying, you know, you can't build the GPT thing, I think we're doing a good job on the environment. And at the same time, our comp plan recognizes that's a heavy industry area, and it's going to stay a heavy industry area. What we don't have are the tools to figure out, you know, what if BP does want to start exporting unrefined crude? You know, that could be a threat to jobs right there if they're shipping that overseas to refine it rather than refining here. Or it's, you know, the increased shipping traffic. And with the federal ban on crude exports being lifted, that's really got us kind of in a state of uncertainty. And there's a lot more that we need to do as a local government to figure out what do we do if those things happen.
Let's talk about Lake Whatcom, and what is your vision for taking care of the lake?
My vision is we need more money, and we can talk about that, right? You know, we have some good programs that we have some data that show that are working, and you know, the more expensive ones are retrofitting stormwater runoff through, you know, better technology vaults and filters to decrease the phosphorus loading. We have smaller programs working with homeowners to try to incentivize them to, you know, take out lawn and put native landscaping in. All of these are funded with our flood/stormwater tax fund, which is now in the next budget year going to be burning into our reserves. We are unable to maintain our current level of services for protecting Lake Whatcom without having a conversation about finding new revenues for that.
All right, Todd Donovan, what do you think is the most important thing that voters should know about you, Todd Donovan?
I'm the defending champion of the Bellingham Pub Run.
Do you want to give us some background?
It was a fundraiser. Probably not the smartest event to have hundreds of people running through town going to 15 pubs. But I won, and then they shut it down after that, so I can say I'm the defending champion. I don't know what else. You know, I think people know I've been at Western for about 25 years. I'm enjoying my time on council. I'd hope to spend at least another term doing it.
Todd Donovan, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
And welcome back to Cascadia News Now. That was candidate and councilman Todd Donovan talking to our own Stephanie Contreras. Tim, what'd you think about how Todd did there?
Well, first, again, I want to say that I think Stephanie did an excellent job in asking some pretty pointed questions of these candidates. I guess what I would say is, you know, Todd, and I think this feeds back into his decision to run in the North Bellingham precinct or district. He has a very stern message, I think, to the people of Whatcom County that the county has not been good in its management of money. It has not taken the tax increases that other municipalities like Bellingham and Ferndale and Linden, they've all taken these 1%, and even 1% increases do not keep pace with things like population increase, economic growth, all those things. So what is happening is the level of service that Whatcom County can provide to people is being constricted. And this is a very tough message to deliver. This is not something a lot of people want to hear. And I think that he needed the, I guess I would say, the safety of a pretty progressive district like District 2 in North Bellingham to take that message out to the public. So I think that he doesn't have a sexy or fun thing to talk to the public about, but I think that this is something that the public needs to hear. So it's a terrific message for Todd Donovan to take out.
Well, that's a very good point. We in Whatcom County have a pretty good quality of life, and that does not come cheaply at the civic level. You know, there are a lot of programs like Amy was talking about with, you know, everything from needle exchanges to other services. Do you think that will get easier with the new districts?
I think that it gives latitude to the candidates to talk about these tough sorts of issues. I think, you know, if you were to be out in the rural county and you're talking about, you know, maybe we need to look at revenue increase, that might be a death sentence to a county council person out in the county. I think that people in municipal areas understand maybe a little more the close tie between the taxes they pay and the services they get back. I think a lot of people move out into rural areas just because they're not interested in the services. They don't have an interest in it. They don't care about it. So I do think that it gives him some latitude. And I think that, you know, the interesting thing about their candidacy is on most of the things that they're talking about, I don't think you can slide a piece of paper between them on it. They're both opposed to the jail, and they're both opposed to the jail on fairly similar matters. A classic is that, you know, Skagit County got a jail of approximately the same number of beds with union labor for half the cost. And so this is a question they both have. I said earlier in the hour that Amy brings new things. Todd is kind of drilling down into these more difficult sorts of questions. And with Carl Weimer leaving the county council, he is the person that formerly could look at something from 100,000 feet, 40,000 feet, and 6 inches away with some brilliance and some insight, and we're going to lose that person. And I think that there's an expectation that, that Todd is going to backfill some of that in his campaign. And I think he's bringing up some very profound and difficult kinds of questions. Amy's very aspirational in what she wants to do. I think Todd's saying, you know, we're having trouble doing even the things that we're supposed to do and we must do. And these aspirational things are terrific and wonderful, but let's get back to basics on this.
When I want to talk about the thing that I liked the most from his interview was him really talking about, because Stephanie kind of stuck it to him over the, you know, his, you know, quote unquote Democrat statement questioning Glasser's commitment to the party, I guess. And he really kind of took that and took that back and talked about, you know, we're all in the same party here. And a lot of local elections, not just Whatcom County, but Whatcom County, when there are two candidates who are so similar, kind of devolve into these awful whisper campaigns and, you know, stupidity. And I was really happy to kind of see a flat rejection of that from him.
Correct. And I think the tragedy of this particular race at this time is that, you know, there's a third candidate, obviously, in a primary. That candidate, Daniel Collier, has not responded to requests for interviews. He's not been available. We don't know what he thinks. We don't know. He's gotten money from the Republican Party. What he thinks and what he's going to do, we don't know. But the mechanics of our political system is that Amy and Todd are going to peel votes off from one another, and Daniel's going to be in the top two. And so we're really talking about an August primary, low turnout, the hot days of August, people are doing other things. But it would be terrific, it would be wonderful if Amy and Todd could get through the primary together, and then we could have a more extensive discussion of the kinds of issues they're talking about. But you're right, the essential difficulty and tragedy of our time is that when you have races with people that are very close ideologically, they can get kind of edgy.
Yeah, and it would be nice. And I think that I don't know anything about this other candidate because there's not much to know publicly. But, you know, both Todd and Amy have put themselves out there very much. They're putting forward ideas. They're making their case. And it's nice to see that this is what's good about democracy.
It really is. And I think Todd and Amy talked about the dynamics. I think that Amy maybe had an expectation that nobody would run in her district. I think that was a little, I don't want to use bad words, but I think it was a little naive in the sense that there were four people that lived in that district. It's probably the easiest district for those particular four people to get elected in. I think it was pretty obvious that somebody was going to run. And I think that she really drew the most difficult card of all when Todd decided late because of Sat Paul Sadu, as he explained, because of what Sat Paul Sadu had decided to do. When Todd ran there, because I think that Amy and Todd would make a really terrific team on county council. And it's too bad in a sense that they're going head to head in this way.
And that's all the time we have tonight. I am Dave Willingham, joined by our other host, Tim Johnson. Stephanie Contouros is off but conducted those fabulous interviews. Thank you to her. She is also our producer. Devlin Sweeney is our fantastic engineer. And we will be back soon with more candidates, more interviews, and we'll talk to you then.